Okay, I reopened the board meeting. We are discussing under agenda reference 6 paper on amendments to IFRS 1. Dehun, will you be given the presentation? Please, go ahead.
Agenda paper 6 is to analyze comment letters on the exposure draft to government loans and to present the stand recommendation for finalizing the amendment. In August 2011, the board received a request to amend IFRS 1 to allow first-time adopters the same prospective application provisions in certain IFRSs as have been made available to existing preparers. IAS 20 requires entity to measure government loans with a below market rate of interest at fair value on initial recognition. A first-time adopter applying IAS 20 retrospectively to existing government loans at the date of transition would be required to identify a fair value at an earlier date. In October 2011, the board published the exposure draft government loans to require first-time adopters to apply the same prospective application provisions of IAS 20 as have been made available to existing preparers. We received 35 comment letters, and all the comment letters supported the proposed amendments to IFRS 1. But some of them raised concern about the scope and wording of the draft. First of all, some respondents raised concern about the scope. A respondent noted that government loans may be accounted for directly as equity under some national gaps. The respondent argued that grandfathering such a practice would not provide a suitable starting point for accounting in accordance with IFRS. We think that draft paragraph B10 should be amended to limit the scope of the proposed exception to matters of recognition and measurement. It means that a first-time adopter would be required to classify such a loan as a liability in accordance with IAS 32, but would not be required to restate the carrying amounts of the previous gap balance for the loan at the transition date. Secondly, another comment is that it is not clear how an entity should subsequently account for existing government loans at a below market rate of interest. We think that the intention of the board is to require an entity to apply IFRS 9 after transition date to those existing government loans. To apply IFRS 9 after the transition date, the entity should calculate the effective interest rate by comparing the carrying amounts at the transition date with the amounts and timing of expected repayments to the government. As shown paragraph 15, the staff recommend clarification be made to the wording of paragraph B10. We also think that it would be helpful to add an example as part of implementation guidance. Lastly, the proposed amendments permit an entity to apply IFRS 9 retrospectively if the entity obtained the information needed to apply IFRS 9 at the relevant time. Some respondents argued that the amendments should clarify whether or not the option is available on a loan-by-loan basis. The proposed amendments indicate that an entity can apply the paragraph selectively on a loan-by-loan basis when the information needed can be obtained. Therefore, as shown paragraph 19, we recommend clarification be made to the wording of the exception. Regarding effective dates, we recommend that the final amendments be effective from 2013, and subject to the discussion at the board meeting, we will prepare a ballot draft, and our objective is to issue the amendment by mid-February. Any comments? Questions?
Okay, I open the floor for discussion. Do you want to answer all the questions in one go? Or what do you propose? Yes?
Yes. That we, yes.
So if we have, I suppose then it's best that if you have disagreement with any of the questions that you would voice that. PK?
Kim, I just want to understand the para B10 that you have proposed in question one. When I read it one time, I get one way I read it, and when I read it another time, I read it differently. Do you intend this to apply for the loans entered before the date of transition to IFRS or after the date of transition to IFRS? I think this is for those loans which were entered prior to transition. Somehow this wording here, prospectively to loans entered into on or after the date of transition to IFRS, is throwing me off. Can you just throw some light into that, if you don't mind? And I have another comment after that.
Good.
Yes, PK, you're right in picking us up on that wording. And as far as I can recall, I don't think anybody picked it up through the comment letters. But now that you've raised it, I do see that that looks a little confusing. I can confirm that, yes, our intention is that this relief applies only to loans entered into prior to data transition, and that any loans entered into after data transition or from data transition onwards would be purely under IFRS. But you're right, the wording there does look a little confusing, so we'll make an amendment to that prior to preparing the ballot draft.
Good close reading. Do you have a follow-up question, PK?
Yeah, if you don't mind.
We took the sentence from other paragraphs in Appendix B, like B2 and B3. So I think the sentence structure of this B10 is consistent with other requirements in the Appendix B. So,
but I agree with PK. It looks confusing, so we should look at those words.
I'm not suggesting change it, but have a look at it, because when I read it, I just got confused. So I'm just saying. The second point is that maybe this is, I'm a little biased. The government loans are generally, I'm not making any policy statement here, so don't get me wrong. Generally, government loans are given to big companies to move into depressed areas to, not always, but most of the time, to big companies like an airline going into a new city to start a hub or, you know, starting an industry and things like that. They're very capable of doing IFRS 9, you know. The point I want to make is that on the date of transition, we are going to grandfather them forever on the IFRS 9 recognition of a loan at a fair value on the day of the transition. Is that something, I don't want to, I'm not going to make this as an issue. I'm just questioning whether is it we are giving it too much pass to them.
The intention was to provide the same relief to first-time adopters as we had given to existing preparers. So when we made the change a few years ago to IAS 20, we said, you know, whatever you'd been doing in terms of your accounting previously, we weren't going to make you go back and change that. It was only the new loans. So that really is our intention here. And it may well be that some companies could do, you know, additional work and restate in accordance with IFRS 9, and we've given that option here if they have the information.
Philippe?
A question. I want to make sure I understand what we're proposing when we say it shall not adjust. It shall not. It's not really, if it's a prohibition to adjust the previous gap amount. So let's take an entity which has received a loan from government, a 10-year loan at 2% of interest in jurisdictions where inflation is 10% per year, so you could expect normal rate of interest to be at least 10%. So we ask them to reclassify out of equity and to record a liability based on the face amount of the loan received, not on the fair value. And we prohibit them, because we said shall not adjust previous gap amounts, we prohibit them from recognizing this liability at fair value. Is that correct? Is that a relief?
If they didn't...
To permit, not to restate, would be a relief, but to prohibit...
Okay. In order for them to restate, in accordance with IFRS, they would need to have the information about fair value at date of inception. And we're saying that if they did have that information, then yes, they are permitted to restate.
Well, I'm not sure we say that, because we say it shall not adjust. We seek to prohibit any adjustment.
That's right. But we start that sentence, but just turn to the appendix. So in the appendix where you've got the full text of the proposed amendment, paragraph B10, the second sentence starts except as permitted by paragraph B11. So that prohibition on restatement is applies except when the conditions in paragraph B11 apply. And the conditions in paragraph B11 are all about if you did have the relevant fair value information collected as at the time of inception of the loan, then you are permitted to restate.
Stephen?
I've got two questions. One about the circumstances when you are permitted to go back and do the restatement, and then another about when it's previously classified as equity. I'm happy with having this relief because I guess that the net impact on profit or loss is pretty limited in this case, because you either, if you do restate, you have more interest, but you also then offset that with the deferred credit from the government grant effectively. Where it does create a problem though is in terms of operating income. So you're going to, if you don't restate, you're going to understate operating income and overstate sort of your net investment result. And it says here that you've got to have the information was gathered at the time the loan was originally received. But we don't impose that anywhere else. So if we're doing a restatement of IFRS, restatement based upon IFRS 9, restatement of fair values, we don't say in order to recognize something at fair value, you had to have measured the fair value 20 years ago. It's based up, we would allow people to work out what the fair value would have been using information appropriate for 20 years ago. And there's a slight contradiction. If you look at page 7, B11 says, provided the information needed to apply these requirements was obtained at the time. But then in your recommendation it says, when the information needed can be obtained. So, to my mind, the recommendation is the better way. If you can reliably determine what discount rate you should use to measure the loan when it was received 20 years ago, well, that's fine. Why are we adding the additional thing on, which is you had to have done it 20 years ago?
I thought generally if you were going to do something retrospectively for fair value, you had to have the, we said you can't use hindsight. And so I thought that was kind of consistent with what we've always said.
But hindsight is always used. If you're going to, if you're transitioning and the on transition you're required to measure something at fair value, or under previous gap you didn't measure it at fair value, then in order to, let me change that. It's not fair value, it's measuring at on a different cost basis. So let's suppose your amortized cost.
That's different if you're talking about cost. I'm talking about fair value. That's what I thought.
This is a cost measurement of this item. It would be at amortized cost, and it's the restatement of what the initial carrying amount would be, which is going back to determine what the fair value was at inception, so what it should have been booked. Yeah, but that we do that, don't we? And under the amortized cost,
I think number one, we don't always do it. There are other provisions in our literature where we require contemporaneous information to exist. notably business combinations in IFRS 1, where we say you can't go back and do a purchase unless you have contemporaneous information that would allow you to do so. So we have that before. The other point is you might make a good argument that this was a bad thing to do, but that should have been made when we granted the relief to everybody else. All we're doing in this amendment is correcting our mistake in that we granted relief to everybody but first-time adopters and placed placed a different burden on first-time adopters than we did on anybody else. So Stephen's arguments might be completely appropriate, but this is the wrong place to have them. We should have had them when we granted the relief in the first place.
Okay, point taken. Can I go on to my other point? But you said about what if it was originally classified as equity, then you would apply the current classification, so you would reclassify it to be a loan. How do you know what the carrying amount is if it was originally classified as equity? If when we received it, we debited cash and credited equity, there is no carrying amount. So what amount do you put on it then? just the amount you originally received?
Yes, I think that's the only thing that makes sense. I mean, we don't know the details of every different national GAAP, so we don't know whether this would have been traced separately in equity or whether it would have just gone into retained earnings or something else like that. So we don't know that. But I would say, yes, whatever the original amount was would seem to be to make sense if it wasn't subsequently traced within equity in the previous GAAP.
Pat?
Okay.
Pat?
Mike? Question was along the same lines as Stephen's second one. Michael and I chatted before the board meeting about this issue of when the previous government assistance was classified as equity and now will be classified as a loan under IAS 32. I think that the basis for conclusions needs to have a little bit more discussion around how that conclusion might in fact unfold, and perhaps also an illustration of the accounting. You have some guidance on implementation here on the very last page, and this in my mind looks like it's a situation where you had it previously categorized as a loan and now it's going to also be a loan under 32. I think the circumstance that we were just discussing, it might be helpful to have something like that in there as well. Just to make it more clear.
Certainly, we could modify that example so that it was equity, okay. Equity under previous GAAP, just to illustrate that additional point in the one example.
Okay, good.
Any other questions? With the clarifications resulting from this discussion, can we answer the questions affirmatively?
Yes.
Such is the case. Thank you very much. Yes, Doc.
So I just want to mention about the regarding the general things in the IFRS 1, and I accept all the proposal you raised. That's fine, but I think we have to discuss general exception in the future agenda, which you raised. Perhaps that should be raised in the different timing. The reason why I think it is important is because we are changing a lot of IFRS standards now. And the first time adopter who are planning to adopt IFRS in coming couple of years, they intend to apply the new standards directly rather than go to the current standards because they would like to avoid double change. So then there is a question whether they can enjoy same exemption as the existing IFRS applier enjoys. So for example, revenue recognition, I think we amended IFRS 1 so that the first time adopter can enjoy the same exemption. And the reason why we amended is IFRS of revenue recognition is, you know, in many jurisdictions, their current revenue recognition rules looks like almost similar we can assume that. But perhaps it may not happen in Lisa County. There might be some jurisdiction which has a different lease standards. So therefore, it is quite reasonable that we ask restatement for the non-IFRS applier. I understand this. However, again, it might be unfair for the country which has made significant convergence so far, say for example, lease accounting, who have converged almost identical to the IS-17s. So it could be unfair. So the important thing is we have to discuss the nature of IFRS in general. And there are lots of countries who made a great effort for the convergence, and they have almost same standards, you know. And although they might not be identical word for word, but nearly same standards. So if you require restatement for those countries, whereas not requiring restatement for the current IFRS applier, then what was the benefit of convergence so far? And I understand the original purpose of IFRS 1 is to protect the current IFRS applier from the newcomer who is like IPO companies who joined IFRS this year. I understand the purpose, original purpose of IFRS 1. However, question is whether same strictness is necessary for country basis who made, in a sense, significant convergence so far. So I think we need to think about kind of general exemption rules in the IFRS 9 in the future. But I'm not proposing we should discuss it now, but in the future, this is the thing we need to discuss in the broader future agenda.
I think we have talked about this before, but Wayne?
The staff plans to bring that analysis to the board in the next couple of months.
There you go.
We have some history on it. Whether this board wants to continue that history is open for discussion.
Taka, first, as a principle, exemption is given only after the board decides. No, the exemption is individually determined. But as to the concern raised by you, I think we had experience several years ago, exactly this related to lease standards. When Canada decided to adopt our standard, they raised exactly the same issue and proposed, you know, give exemptions for classification purpose. They said our leasing standards are not exactly the same, but I don't know, remember the words. You can see our book. And basically the same, and we decided to give them exemption, not necessary for you to reclassify based on our new standards and reassess. And so I think in the future we can discuss if such things happens and you can raise.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think we can continue with the next item on the agenda,